on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go on a Tuesday.
You think the Pac-12 invited the Raiders?
The band's all here. Well, maybe they should be, like we said yesterday, relegated down to one of those conferences.
The Pac-12 doesn't want the Raiders. They want the Panthers now.
Exactly. They'd rather have the Panthers. They'd rather have Andy Dalton in their league.
Get over here, Andy Dalton. What degree is Andy Dalton going for to play in a college conference again?
Well, his master's? His master's? I don't know. Maybe he got a master's TCU. I don't know. I don't know what kind of degrees Andy Dalton has.
Andy Dalton's going to have to get his PhD.
Yeah.
That's your son over there.
At TCU. Did you see where he gave the Horned Frogs sign coming off the field?
He still does that.
Yeah, he still does that.
Good for him, I guess.
Yes. Yes, good for him.
I mean, I guess the Panthers don't have a sign, and even if they did, you wouldn't want to do it, even if you won a game. It's the Panthers.
Yeah, I don't know. Good. He gave the sign the other day. My wife stopped it on the television. Or she rewound it, and because she saw it, she stopped it on the television and sent me a screenshot.
TCU's little hand signal's the worst one in college sports, right?
Yeah, I don't really...
It's your first two fingers, and you just sort of fold it halfway down,
yeah.
It's very weird.
Yes.
I don't know what's going on there. It's supposed to be a frog somehow.
Yes.
It's the worst one.
It's not a good one. I'll give you that. But he does still do it, so I give him credit for that. That's kind of cool. I mean, he's 36? It's been a while.
It has been a long time.
It's been a long time since he was at TCU.
All right, here we go.
The First Bite.
What conference is UNLV in?
Let's say the Big 12.
They're not in the Big 12.
Well, they might be one day.
That's the one I know they're not in.
They
the
might
Big
be
12.
One day. This changed.
It might change before we finish this segment.
Yes. Adam Hill and I were working on this for the paper yesterday. And, I think we rewrote the stories five times.
Yeah.
Because we had, it was just one of those things where every 5 minutes, UNLV was staying in the Mountain West, going to the Pac-12, sitting up late, pondering the situation. I think they're still pondering it. They probably pulled an all-nighter. Keith Whitfield and Eric Harper sat in a room all night and pondered this.
All right, so here's kind of the basic recap. The Pac-12 has six teams, and starting yesterday morning. They wanted four AAC teams. They wanted Memphis, Tulane, South Florida, and UTSA. Those four schools yesterday morning said no.
They said we are staying in
the AAC.
Right.
That was sort of step one yesterday, which meant the Pac-12 then pivoted.
Had to recircle around.
To Mountain West schools. Uh-huh. And I don't know exactly what order it went in or if it was all at the same time. But ultimately, from reports from Brett McMurphy and Nicole Auerbach and a whole bunch of people that cover college sports, UNLV, Air Force, Utah State, and even San Jose State got some sort of offer from the Pac-12. Air Force and UNLV reportedly agreed to stay in the Mountain West, and they were reportedly going to get a $10 million bonus. Just a, hey, here's $10 million for staying here. San Jose State also agreed to remain in the Mountain West.
They weren't going to get 10.
They were not getting a $10 million bonus. And then there was Utah State.
Who, by the way, messed everything up yesterday.
All other seven Mountain West members, granted half of them didn't have a choice, but the other seven were like, we're staying. We're going to stay Mountain West strong. And Utah State said, no, thank you. We're going to the Pac-12.
Yes, and that messed everything up.
Because apparently, UNLV and Air Force, their sort of agreement to stay in the Mountain West was contingent upon
everybody staying there.
All eight current Mountain West
to have a real conference
staying there. And then that led to another round yesterday afternoon, last night, of UNLV saying, wait a minute, we're going to reconsider our options.
As with Air Force.
And Air Force doing the same thing. Now, Air Force, Brett McMurphy tweeted this out, Air Force, if they were to leave, is apparently going to the AAC.
Right.
And UNLV would be going to the Pac-12 if they were to leave. So that's where we stand right now. Four AAC schools said no. Three out of four Mountain West schools initially said no to the Pac-12, but Utah State said yes, and now UNLV is sitting down basically
deciding
what conference they want to be in, the Mountain West or the Pac-12. And kind
UNLV suddenly has some juice.
They've got some juice, last week
it was like, oh, you were left behind. Nobody wants you. They only wanted the four that went, and now, like you said, it's an interesting spot to be in to have two conferences needing you you know, to become a conference, to actually become a conference.
The Mountain West would need another school, too.
They got to keep Air Force and another one. Yeah, exactly. So it's fascinating.
Which conference would you go to? UNLV.
This is tough.
I'm assuming they're going to make some sort of announcement today. I assume that has to happen. I mean, I guess it doesn't have to, but I assume they're going to make some sort of decision today.
Or your some UNLV, sort of announcement that we're still pondering this.
Your UNLV, your choices are the Mountain West, where in theory you have a $10 million signing bonus, or the Pac-12, where you might have to pay $18 million to get out
of the conference. Well, you might not, though. If you can make a deal and say, hey, Pac-12, if we're coming, you're really, really helping out a lot with these exit fees. So how much do you want us?
Which one do you want to be in?
Well, I think within 2 years, you're going to disagree with me, but I think within 2 years, they're in the Big 12.
They don't have a chance in hell.
Okay. All right, so you're disagreeing.
They don't have a chance
in
hell.
All right. I think that...
Well, we can talk about that in a minute.
Okay.
Which one are you choosing today? 2 years from... Well, here's the thing. 2 years from now is when the Pac-12 starts. Right.
But again, you can ask for an out. That could be part of your deal. That could be part of your deal, right?
Which of these two conferences do you want to be in?
Probably the Pac-12.
Yes. It's a better conference.
Probably the Pac-12. Especially on the chance that, and we heard different reports yesterday as well, right, about Gonzaga going in as a non-football member, and you know, because that'd make it actually a pretty good basketball conference. Yeah.
Even without Gonzaga, it's a much better basketball conference. If they stay in the Mountain West, here's the KenPom ranks of the remaining six Mountain West schools. Yeah, for basketball. New Mexico last year was 29. Good season.
Good season.
Nevada was 40. UNLV was 73.
Not a good season.
Wyoming was 159. San Jose State was 248. Air Force was 264.
Right. Right.
And you'd have to add UTEP, Rice, or FCS schools, New Mexico State. None of those teams are top 100 basketball programs. You're in a one-bid conference.
Yeah.
If you stay in the Mountain West. In the Pac-12, now they're going to probably have to add some New Mexico State or UTEP or something too, but you're going to have a conference that has multiple teams.
Okay, so do it with Gonzaga in the conference.
Much better. Yeah, it's
a legitimate basketball. Your Ken Poms are much better.
Yes. Oh, yeah. You've got two legitimate top 30 programs in Gonzaga and San Diego State.
Right.
Ready to go right there. Plus, you throw in Boise State and Colorado State. Those are basically as good as New Mexico and Nevada were last year. And you've got a good middle
team
as well.
And I don't know how, you know, there have been years where Washington State's been pretty decent, right?
Yeah, those programs, I kind of view them as they've got to rebuild everything because they literally got left behind. So
right, right.
Who wants to go there at the moment? Right. I don't know. But yes, you have you don't have the bottom falling out like you do in the current Mountain West where Air Force,
San Jose
State.
You start getting into the 100 and 200 KenPom teams.
Where you have Air Force and San Jose State, and then you're probably having to add New Mexico State or UTEP or something like that who aren't going to be top 100 programs. So basketball-wise, I think the Pac-12 is a no-brainer better than what the current Mountain West is. And football-wise, it probably is too.
Oh, yeah. If the UNLV would jump over?
Yeah. It's a
much better conference.
Now, I understand the logic of, hey, the Mountain West is going to give us a $10 million bonus. The Pac-12 wants us to pay $18 million of our exit fee to leave the Mountain West. Well, we're not going to pay $18 million. We're going to take the $10 million bonus and just stay. I get the logic in that, but the Pac-12 is a better conference. And I'm curious, how much do you think the Pac-12 pays the exit fee? Because
how much do they want them?
Well, part of the reason that the AAC schools did not leave is that
the Pac-12 wouldn't pay almost anything.
They were
going to
pay $2.5 million
of a $25
million exit fee.
Right.
And the AAC schools, I'm sure there were other reasons.
Travel.
But they were like, we're not going to pay $23 million to get out of this conference
right.
and join another group of five conference. So is the Pac-12 now desperate enough to say, hey, UNLV, we're going to pay $15 million of your exit fee?
If I'm UNLV, I'm throwing that out there.
Because
I'm throwing out 18.
If I'm the Pac-12, and clearly they wanted the AAC schools ahead of UNLV. Memphis was higher on their list than UNLV. I would just go back to Memphis and say, well, here's $15 million.
Oh, okay, I see your logic.
Like, they wanted Memphis more than UNLV. Why would they give UNLV $15 million instead of just going back to Memphis and saying, hey, we messed up. You did a good job negotiating. You did a good job putting your foot down. So here's $15 million we're going to give to you instead of to UNLV, who we clearly wanted more the first time around. The AAC schools didn't do anything yesterday that locks them into the AAC forever.
No, they just made a statement that we're going to stay and we're all together.
Yeah. Memphis can very easily come out and say, well, the Pac-12 gate was a pretty sweet deal the next day, so see you later, AAC, and nothing, it's fine. So I wonder what the Pac-12 would actually offer UNLV, because to me, it doesn't make sense for the Pac-12 to give UNLV $15 million after they only offered Memphis 2.5. Like, there's a massive logical break there. If you're the Pac-12,
I'd ask for it.
I would too.
It doesn't mean they have to give it to you, but right. I'd ask for everything at this point. Yeah. I mean, you've got, for once, unless they went back to Memphis, UNLV has some power right now.
Yeah.
And if you do, try to make the best deal for yourself. Wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And the only fear would be if they do go back to Memphis. Like, if the Pac-12 was willing to give UNLV, let's just say, hypothetically, $7 million, and UNLV says, well, we want 15, and they say, all right, well, we're going back to Memphis, and then Memphis agrees for whatever, and all of a sudden UNLV's left out again. And they're sitting here in a Mountain West, which is a one-bid basketball conference and has, like, two good football programs.
Yeah. At this point, given what Utah State did, I don't know how good this is for the Mountain
West. God, it's so funny that Utah State left. It's so funny that they
Utah State messed us up yesterday.
It's so funny.
They messed us up yesterday. Adam and I were pounding some stories out, and then Utah State suddenly goes to the Pac-12, and everything just blows up.
How did that happen? Like,
they've got a new AD there. Maybe she just fell in love with the idea of being in the Pac-12.
Did she not talk to the other schools? Like, UNLV and Air Force and San Jose State and Utah State were supposedly all kind of offered spots in the Pac-12. And there's been reporting, Pete Thamel had a bunch of tweets about how UNLV and Air Force are in close communication because if one of them goes, they're both going to go. Or if one of them stays, they're both going to stay type situation. Did they not call Utah State? Did they not have a conversation? Did UNLV, Air Force, San Jose State, and Utah State, did they not all talk to each other and say, hey,
we're staying?
Right. Because yesterday, would it not have made sense if Utah State says, see you later, we're going to the Pac-12, for the other three to say, all right, we're doing that too?
I mean, I think like the first round when the four went, I think Utah State took everyone by surprise.
Right. Like, why? I don't get that. Like, why was there not some sort of communication between Utah State and the other three schools that had an offer? That part just is bizarre to me that they wouldn't have had some sort of conversation, because the way it was reported, UNLV and Air Force got caught by surprise by that.
Oh, I think they did. I think there probably was an original discussion where they all agreed to stay.
Yeah.
And then she had a change of heart and went to her president, and all of a sudden, Utah State's headed
right
to the Pac-12.
Like, what was that? Like, there's no reason UNLV and Air Force should have been surprised by that. It should have been, Utah State's going. All right, well, we are too. Or, bleep Utah State, we're just going to stay put.
Right.
Like, that part's weird. That one of the four that got offered was like, yeah, we're going to do it. We're going to go. And not tell anybody? I don't know. Very, very strange. And now Utah State's sitting around as, like, the school that actually might have ruined the Mountain West.
Yeah.
Let me ask you to give a prediction.
Oh.
Do they go to the Pac-12 today, UNLV?
I think the odds favor it.
Yeah.
That they go to the Pac-12.
I think that's got to be the ultimate answer.
That has to be at the books, at Danny's book, as he's scrolling his phone, when he's looking for odds, I think the odds would favor them going to the Pac-12 now that this happened with Utah State.
Yeah.
And they just don't want to. I just don't think. I think they signed the memorandum with the agreement that all eight are staying.
Right.
That we're all staying together. And then when that didn't happen, they had the opportunity to say no.
Yeah, because
we're not doing this.
The problem with just Utah State leaving, it's not that Utah State's some unbelievable program that you have to have, but it drops you down to 7 football members.
Right.
And
right.
It means you have to add at least one football member, and the options become
New Mexico State, UTEP.
And you also, by the way, have to add 2 basketball members in this scenario as well. But, yeah, you become, all right, we're adding UTEP, we're adding New Mexico State, something like that, and it becomes, okay, we're getting worse and worse every time we do something.
Right.
Whereas if you go to the Pac-12, UNLV going to the Pac-12 would give them 8, and they wouldn't have to do anything right away. They probably would at some point, because 8's not a
It's a tenuous number.
Right. It's not a big number. Like, as soon if one of your members gets an offer to the Big 12, then...
then it's a tenuous number.
You're down to seven you're again and not a real again. Conference. But I also do wonder... like, the other part of this that's interesting is the... if UNLV and Air Force leave, and presumably San Jose State would still have an offer to go to the Pac-12, I'm guessing there.
How about the Spartans?
Yeah.
They're probably sitting there saying, hey, we'll go.
Yeah. The Mountain West doesn't exist anymore. Right. Now, all of a sudden, Nevada, New Mexico, Wyoming are
just... and if they bring three with them, they get to a number where the exit fees disappear.
Right. The so eventually, the conference doesn't exist anymore.
And there are no exit fees.
Right. Which is what I'm guessing the Pac-12 is hoping for at this point.
Well, if they invited four of them.
Yeah. And by the way, that's another reason why the Pac-12 missing on the AAC, I think, is a big deal. The Pac-12, if they had landed Memphis, Tulane, UTSA, and South Florida, they decimate the AAC. The AAC is no longer in competition for the best group of five, and it's easily the Pac-12. Right, but because
the best group of five schools,
right,
or best group of five conference, yes.
But because the AAC kept those members, the AAC can still challenge the current Pac-12 for who's the best group of five. So yesterday, the Pac-12 yesterday had a chance to kill the AAC, and they failed. And then they had a chance to kill the Mountain West, almost failed. Maybe they're going to succeed, and we might find out today. But part of the Pac-12, I think, what their goal was and what they kind of needed to do was kill off the other good group of five conferences and make it to where you as the Pac-12 are clearly the fifth best conference in college sports.
Teresa Gold versus Gloria Navarez. Head-to-head battle against two friends.
I guess.
They're friends. Well,
are they friends?
Yeah.
Are they going to be friends in like
24
hours?
I don't know if they're friends
hours?
Anymore. I don't know if they're friends after yesterday, the commissioners of those Mountain West and Pac-12.
Because one of them might have just killed the other one's job.
Yeah, that's true. We'll see today when everyone starts making decisions. I would think with all the news that came out, with all the writing that was done about it, I agree with you. I think UNLV has to say something today. And they're not ones to say anything to anybody. Let me put that out there.
Well, yesterday, all this news is happening, and UNLV's just not mentioned for, like, hours.
Right.
And then eventually, hey, UNLV's going to stay in the Mountain West. But for the longest time, it was AAC says no. Gonzaga? Maybe. Utah State could be involved. Air Force is talking to the AAC. And then finally, late in the day, it was like, UNLV's committed to the Mountain West.
An hour later, just kidding. They are now huddling in the UNLV boardroom over there on campus and discussing this late into Monday night. That's all we got from them.
Coming up next, we're going to stick with some conference realignment because what is Gonzaga actually going to do?
Live from the Findlay Toyota ESPN Las Vegas studios, this is the Press Box with Graney and Bischoff on ESPN Las Vegas.
I did want to read from our text line. Rob says, what about adding Hawaii to the Mountain West? They could add them in every sport. They're already in football, but they could add them in other sports. That would help. They'd get to seven basketball members, obviously assuming that UNLV Air Force and San Jose State stay. They would still need to add at least one more basketball playing school and one more football playing school, but that would be a possibility, I would think. John says, I bet tens of dollars the AD at Utah State has a bonus in their contract to move up a conference. Would this be considered up a conference? I mean, I think it's better, but it's still a group of five conference.
Yeah, it's still a group of five conference. And, I mean, what we're saying, and I believe what we're saying is opinion. There's no right. I mean, unless you, like you said, go to KenPom and other kind of rankings and kind of do pros and cons of each one that you can basically say to your bosses, we're moving up in a conference.
Yeah.
But they're both group of fives.
Right. You're not.
So if you're going to a power four, yes, you're moving up.
Yeah.
If they're both group of fives, they're both group of fives, Even though we both think the Pac-12 is a better league.
Now, I want to talk about the Gonzaga stuff for a minute because Brett McMurphy reported yesterday that Gonzaga was leaving the WCC for the Pac-12 and had the detail that Gonzaga would receive a full revenue share despite not playing football, which I don't think has ever happened in the history of a football-playing conference in college sports. Then, like, everyone that reports on college football, Nicole Auerbach, John Rothstein, John Canzano, like, everybody tweeted, that's not true. They've talked about it, but Gonzaga had not said they were leaving the WCC. Even a beat writer of Gonzaga basketball had a direct quote from the AD saying, that's not true. But they've talked, at least. What do you think of the Pac-12 giving Gonzaga a full revenue share, even though Gonzaga doesn't play football.
Well, it might be what you have to do to get them, because Gonzaga, and few people might know this, Gonzaga in the WCC gets so much more than everyone else.
They get whatever they want.
They get whatever they want. They get more shares than everyone else. They get more money than everyone else. They charter everywhere they go. They're a Power Four conference team.
Yes.
Except not being in the Power Four.
Right.
They're in the WCC. They are treated like, you know, Duke. That's how they're treated in the WCC. So maybe if you're the Pac-12, you believe that you have to do that to get them and to pull them away from the sweetest deal, you know, some teams have in the country.
You probably do, and if I'm Gonzaga, I still don't think I accept it. Like, maybe you do if you're Gonzaga because you're going to get, you know, more money than you're currently getting from the WCC. But right now, Gonzaga gets to do basically whatever they want.
Yeah, schedule how they want,
right.
Play whoever they want.
They get the WCC's conference basketball tournament format is they get a bye directly to the semis,
right,
as long as they finish first or second, which happens every single
year. Every year.
Right. They play like four conference games in the regular season because they want to schedule more non-conference
right.
games. They get to do whatever they want, and it doesn't hurt them anymore.
Right.
They get one seeds in the NCAA tournament. Like, they're not punished.
No, it's not punished for being the WCC anymore.
Right.
They're their own entity.
So if I'm Gonzaga, I don't think I'm really interested in the Pac-12 at all. Like, if I'm Gonzaga and
the only thing would be is, like you said, the only thing would be is how much more money am
right.
I getting?
If I'm Gonzaga, like, I'm the only thing I would be interested in is, does the Big 12 want me? Because then you're going to the best conference, basketball conference in the country.
In the country.
And adding Gonzaga, my God. But that's the only one I think I'd be interested in, because otherwise, the Pac,
yeah.
whatever. Like, to me, it just doesn't make that big of a difference for Gonzaga. You're still going to be doing the same exact thing you're doing now. You're just leaving the WCC behind to go to the Pac-12. And, yeah, they're probably not.
And maybe you won't have as much power in
right.
the Pac-12.
You're not going to get a bye directly to the semifinals
in the conference tournament. Right.
So I don't think I would leave if I was Gonzaga unless, like, you know, you're going to get two revenue shares or something like that. I don't know. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me for Gonzaga to leave for this.
Yeah.
At the end
I
of
think
the
it's assumed a lot of places, much like people assume Memphis was going, that they'd assume Gonzaga would just take it because they're in the WCC, and I don't agree with that.
Yeah.
That, oh, why would you stay with those kind of basketball programs? Well, as you said, they do anything you want. Look at their non-conference schedule.
Right.
I mean, they play everybody.
They just kind of do the reverse schedule of a lot of power conference teams, where they play,
right. they play
really
everybody.
Difficult early, and then their WCC schedule's
fairly easy,
but they just do it in reverse from most
right.
conference,
exactly.
power conference teams.
Yeah, exactly. So I agree with you. I don't think it's a slam dunk by any means that yeah. they would go to the Pac-12.
And for the Pac-12 side, all of conference realignment usually is about increasing your media rights deal, and
right.
that is 99.999% of the time just football related. If you have Gonzaga, yes, you're a better basketball playing conference. I don't know if you get more money on your media rights deal, because basketball generally isn't even thought about.
No, it's all about football.
So I get the appeal of wanting Gonzaga because it makes you better in
basketball-wise.
But I'm really curious, do they think that would get them more money from a media outlet? Like, did ESPN tell the Pac-12, if you get Gonzaga, we're going to add an extra blank million
right.
dollars? If they did, then yeah, go get Gonzaga. But if not, it just seems like, okay, yes, it helps your basketball, but you don't actually increase
right.
the revenue. And you technically lose it, because then you're giving Gonzaga a whole bunch of revenue
right.
when they didn't increase the revenue at the end of the day. So that one is weird. I don't think it makes a lot of sense on either side, but we'll see if they do make a move. Coming up next here on ESPN Las Vegas, David Roth joins the show.
He is adorned in flannel and still might not have a building super. He has a turtle who loves to eat rocks. David Roth from Defector is here to tell us about his uninstalled appliances. Subscribe to The Distraction, a Multitude production for Defector. Listen to The Distraction wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, David.
Hi, David. Morning, guys. How are you?
Fantastic. Pop quiz time. What conference does Fresno State play in?
Oh, no. All right, wait. They're going to move to the Pac-12 eventually, right? They're part of that,
yes.
that little cohort that got bought from the Mountain.
Yay, golf
yes,
clap. Golf
they
clap.
Are, eventually.
All right. Which is good too, because you still have to call it the Pac-12, even though as far as I can tell right now, it's like Oregon State, Washington State, and like a couple of like handshakes with people from like the different universities in the Mountain Time Zone. It's very exciting.
I don't know how much you kept up with it yesterday, but the most important move in West Coast college athletics yesterday was Utah State deciding to say, we don't want to be in the Mountain West anymore, and that could cause the Mountain West to cease to exist in like 24 hours.
Yeah, so can you explain a little bit about this? I mean, Ray Vatto wrote a column about this last week, and it was good, and I found it very clarifying, but I also know that this stuff works on maybe 6-8 hour news cycles, so it's possible that everything in that is incorrect at this point.
So Pac-12 has the two members that got left behind. They stole four Mountain West members last week. And then yesterday morning, four teams from the AAC, Memphis, Tulane, South Florida, and UTSA, all said no to the Pac-12, which meant the Pac-12 then invited four more Mountain West schools. Three of them said no, but Utah State said yes and caught everybody by surprise. So now that Utah State said yes, the three Mountain West schools that said no to the Pac-12 are reconsidering their options and might end up leaving the Mountain West today.
And if they did leave the Mountain West, and I'm assuming the other ones that were asked, UNLV is one of those, right?
Yes, it's UNLV. Air Force would actually be going to the American, and then somehow San Jose State found themselves invited to the Pac-12.
That's the biggest upset of all.
Yeah, I mean, San Jose State at least is like, you can almost see the ocean from there. The idea of like, Utah State in the Pac-12, obviously there's a team called the Jazz that plays in that state. It's not the most ridiculous thing about it, but the damage being done to like commonly understood geographic signifiers in all of this is immeasurable. So if the Mountain West, if those teams left, at this point, the Mountain West is down to minus the Boise State, Fresno State teams that moved to the Pac-12 already. Forgive me for making you do this on the radio. I'm just fascinated by it. How many teams are in there now? Is it like there's five and four of them might leave?
So if those four did leave, you would have New Mexico, Nevada, and Wyoming left behind, and then technically Hawaii football.
And it would not be a conference anymore.
Oh, my gosh. All right. I mean, I guess this is sort of the way that it would go, but it's a weird thing that, you know, you read a column or someone that knows stuff tells you, you know, like all the conferences are all going to cannibalize each other, and that's what it's going to be like. And, you know, that sounds correct. It is correct. It's also very difficult to prepare yourself for it actually happening. Like, this just feels like, it's so small scale, and it's such a, you know, janky business to begin with that it's hard to put too much seriousness in it. And yet, it's chaotic. Like, there's something a little unsettling about watching something fall apart in front of your eyes.
Yeah, and it might be happening today. Because the funny part is that UNLV was committed to the Mountain West, and then about an hour later, they found out Utah State was leaving, and then it was, all right, UNLV's huddling for the night to figure out what they want to do.
It's incredible to think of Utah State, which I basically think of as being like a team that gets a 10 seed in the NCAA tournament every 2 years. I pick them to win two games and then they don't. The idea of them as the deciding factor in the dissolution of a power conference is insane to me. But I guess that's how this would go. Ray thinks that UNLV is the big get for the Pac-12, that's the school that they need to have because of the Vegas market and because he, you know, made some noises about gambling. I can't confirm or deny what any of that would, and maybe you couldn't either, like what that actual impact would be down the line. But if UNLV is wobbling, then I would assume that the clock is ticking on the Mountain West.
Yeah, it certainly would appear so. I do need to make sure I ask you this, though. How are you feeling today ahead of a Mets-Braves series that will basically decide a wild card spot in the playoffs?
Like, both as if I'm about to go in for major surgery and kind of okay. Like, I watched the Phillies series with, like, kind of a very – I tried to be mature about it. I failed. But I did, like – I'm at this point, like, I have no choice but to accept that the team is good, and it's okay that I don't understand it. I mean, I don't know that Francisco Lindor is going to play again during the regular season. Back injuries are bad. He's apparently in a great deal of pain. But they keep winning, and they keep – holding off teams that, I mean, the Phillies are wobbly in some ways, but that is a very good baseball team. And the Mets had in terms of just the names in the lineup, no right to take 3 out of 4 from them. The Braves are, I'm frustrated that, you know, they're getting healthy at the wrong time. Ozzie Albies is back and all that. But I can't really count them out. There's a lot of bad history there. But this Mets team feels both like, you know, obviously the 2022 team really was a juggernaut. Like, they won 101 games. That wasn't a joke. They just washed out of the playoffs really quickly in a series that was kind of a joke. This team is not nearly as good as that, and yet I find myself believing in them more, just in the sense that they seem like they're getting hot at the right time, and I'm mystified enough by their success that I have no choice but to kind of tip my cap to it.
So he did 50-50. We talked about this last week. I'm interested. Your lifetime, who's the best baseball player you've seen?
In my lifetime, I mean, I feel like it has to be Ohtani. I think that the only hesitation that I have is that the memory that I have of peak Bonds during the, like, I mean, obviously knowing what the pharmaceutical mix was, knowing the broader context, I've never seen a guy like just intimidate teams in the way that Bonds did, the impact that he had on the game during the seasons where his, like, you know, there were years where he had like an on-base percentage that started with a 5. He was getting walked so much. Like, it's just insane. And yet what Ohtani's doing now, like, I think I'm having more fun with it than anything else, just because it feels so improbable. And then also because, as I think we talked about before, I think there's a very real chance he never runs like this again, at least until he gives up pitching, which, you know, I don't think is going to be anytime soon. And so this is like, it's a one-off thing. Like, he's going to steal 60 bases, and then I would be shocked if he steals more than 20 going forward until such time as he stops pitching. So there's that fun aspect of not just seeing something that no one's ever seen before, but seeing something that you know you're probably not going to see again. And so, like, going beyond the numbers of it, like, I just think that's incredibly special and unique, and I'm digging it a lot.
Just so you know, in 2004, Barry Bonds' on-base percentage started with a 6
because
it was 609. And then if you just took his slugging percentage, that would have been the 36th highest OPS in baseball that year.
I was working at Topps at that time in the baseball card business, and they'd signed a big contract with him, and everybody was really excited about it. And he was kind of a turd, like, just personally to deal with. I didn't get to do it, but he wouldn't, like, speak directly to people. He was doing the famous person thing where he would, like, whisper something to an assistant, and they would be like, "Mr. Bonds would like some water." and yet, it was like the possibility of him being in the office. It was me and all these, like, kind of like just crusty Staten Island guys that had worked at Topps for, you know, 10, 12 years. It was like the Pope was visiting. Like, and all of us, we were aware that he was going to, if he came to the office, which he wound up not doing, we were like, he's going to be really rude to us. And yet, like, I kind of hope that he gives me a withering glare, because it's like meeting a god. You know, it was, I did not remember that his on-base percentage started with a 6. That is, somebody should have done something about that.
He was responsible for 27% of all intentional walks in the National League that year.
Yeah. I mean, they walked him with the bases loaded and stuff. Like, there were things that, I mean, it was like the whole league basically made the same business decision at the same time, which, I, as cool as 55-55 is, the idea of the whole rest of the league being like, no, you just can't. It's not worth trying. that is a different thing.
All right. Before we let you go, your wall has been painted.
I told Danny that before we came on, and he's happy for me. He's a nice guy, but you could hear like a little crestfallen aspect in his voice. Like, he was sort of like, oh man. But yes, it is done. The mission is accomplished. The apartment is normal for the first time. Well, sort of normal. There's some other stuff we need to fix. But yeah, no hole in the wall, no mismatched paint, no stuff dragged across the bedroom and waiting for the contractors to come. So it's a good feeling. I'm not expecting it to last, but I'm trying to enjoy it while it's happening.
Wait, did you paint it, or they actually came back and painted it?
They came back and painted it. I was getting ready to do it, and then I saw the guy that's our acting super, because our super left is like the third one we've been through. It's a real, like, the way the Raiders do coaches is kind of like how we do people administering our building. But he remembered, and a guy came up yesterday and did the whole thing. This is always what's ridiculous about this stuff. Like, you wait 3 weeks for something. It took like 2 hours.
It's a good time. All right, David, yep. I look forward to your next apartment problem, because we will break it down in full. He's David Roth from Defector, as always, David.
Thanks,
David.
Appreciate it. Have a good day.
So there's David Roth. I am fascinated by that because David Roth obviously pays a lot of attention to sports. It's part of his job. And I am kind of curious how many people are like in tune with exactly what happened yesterday in the Pac-12 and the Mountain West that don't live here. Obviously we are. We talk about one of the teams that's heavily involved in this, but like, he lives in New York and was vaguely aware of what was going on, but not exactly of what was going on. Like, how many people care that the Pac-12 is dying?
Well,
excuse me. The Mountain West is probably
dying. I'm sure he's on Twitter a lot. So he saw these kind of crazy updates throughout the day, and he kind of got a sense of what was going on. And I'm sure there's a lot of people like that in our business and outside our business who would follow it. But it would be interesting, like, the middle of the country, like, what do you know about this?
Yeah. Like, if you're Midwest or East, do you kind of just look at what the Pac-12 and the Mountain West are right now and just say, all right, just tell me who's in what conference at the start of the season, we'll go from there.
Right.
It changes next year. Great. Just tell me at the start of next season
who's in each one.
Because I don't think, like, if you're an SEC or a Big Ten fan, you probably don't care what combination is in the Pac-12 versus the Mountain West versus the Mountain West dying. Like, you're just like, all right, whatever. That's a group of five conference, and oh, that sounds kind of cool. Sure, whatever. Why would they take Utah State? I've never heard of that program before. Right. I'm going to go back to Tennessee and Alabama today.
Right, like, exactly.
So
exactly.
I'm kind of curious, across the college sports landscape how many people are dialed into it, because it might – the funny thing is like, a conference might die, schools might get left behind, and more than half of the college sports world might be like, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Like, if not more than half.
Right. Like, Wyoming doesn't really exist anymore. Oh, well.
Right.
Doesn't bother us at all.
Oh, the Power Four conference fans, I don't think have any, they have an inkling, but any care for it.
Yeah.
They just care about their own leagues.
Yeah. They're probably around saying, wait a minute, Utah State went to the Pac-12?
Right.
They read that and like, is this supposed to be Utah? What is Utah State? Never even heard of them before. All right. Coming up next, we'll get into some Monday Night Football, because there might be a good rookie quarterback.
You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN Las Vegas.
Jaden Daniels' first career passing touchdown was to an offensive lineman named Trent Scott. It was Trent Scott's first career touchdown. Who gets the football?
Jaden Daniels.
Oh, they probably gave it to Jaden Daniels.
Afterwards, in the post-game interview on the field, Daniels said he was keeping it.
Okay.
Which he should.
Well,
I disagree. Trent Scott should get it.
Why?
Is Trent Scott going to score another touchdown?
Yes.
No, he's not.
He might score a second one this year.
He's been in the league for like 6 years already and doesn't have a touchdown yet.
It doesn't matter. Now he's got a crazy coaching staff.
Jaden Daniels will score. Hell, he did in that game. We'll score plenty of touchdowns. Go get the ball from Terry McLaurin on that game-sealing touchdown pass at the end. Let Trent Scott have his only touchdown in the NFL ball. That's it.
I mean, it would be funny.
By the way, Daniels has already scored a touchdown before that. He just ran it in.
Right, he ran it in. This was his first passing touchdown.
Keep that ball.
He scored a lot of touchdowns on the ground.
Keep that ball. You don't need the passing touchdown to the offensive lineman. Give it to the offensive lineman.
Who's the offensive coordinator of the Commanders?
Cliff Kingsbury.
Ah, somebody that could have been here.
Yeah, Cliff Kingsbury.
Only talk about Raiders, Ed.
I know.
Only talk about Raiders. We don't talk about people like Cliff Kingsbury and them putting up a great offense and everything like that. By the way, I do want to point out, because nobody ever does it, Commanders game-sealing touchdown only happened because they went for it on 4th-and-4 just into Bengals territory last night. If they had punted, or they could have tried a long field goal, they did not. They went for it, they got it, and then they scored like one or two plays later. That's why you go for it on 4th down, because guess what? If you get it, you go and score a touchdown, and the game is effectively over.
All right. We've heard it often.
Go for it on 4th down, coaches. Is Jaden Daniels the best rookie quarterback? We making that declarative statement after 3 weeks?
I don't think that's an overreaction at all.
Yesterday was by far the best single game
of any of these rookies.
Any rookie has had.
Right.
I know Caleb Williams threw for like 350 on Sunday, but it's still what Daniels did yesterday was much better. He was 21 of 23. I think the fascinating part to me is that Daniels threw multiple great deep balls. Like, they got one-on-one coverage, receivers just sprinting down the field, and he threw some perfect deep balls. Is that something he can do consistently, or is that something that we're going to see every other game, every three games from Jaden Daniels?
Well, I don't know what his numbers were, but from what I remember at LSU, he was really accurate
right.
there also. So maybe he's just a really accurate
right.
passer.
So that's, I think, the interesting part, because obviously the ability to do it is there. The ability for Caleb Williams to do it is there, too. It's just, can you do it on a consistent basis?
Right.
That's what's going to make you're a top 10 or even top 5 quarterback in the NFL. And that's what I'm curious to see with Daniels, because, again, him coming out of college, he only had one great college season as a quarterback, and it was last year at LSU. At Arizona, he got run out of Arizona State, basically.
Right.
So if he can consistently make those passes, he's going to be really, really good. But there's also a chance he does it, you know, once every three games,
right.
and, you know, you get highlight moments, but it's really ultimately not great quarterback play at the end of the day. The other thing from this game, Cincinnati Bengals are 0-3.
Yeah.
And they have lost to New England and Washington in those three games. Also Kansas City, but they've lost to New England and Washington.
They're 0-3 is tough.
It's a very bad record.
It's tough to overcome.
Right. The interesting part for Cincinnati is if you look at the rest of their schedule, they play Carolina this week. Outside of the Raiders, that should probably be a win. They also play the Giants. They play Cleveland twice. They play the Raiders, and they play Denver. There are a lot of bottom 10 teams in the NFL
that they can
left
get
on this schedule. And if the Bengals are actually going to be a decent playoff-level team, they're going to beat some good teams as well on their schedule,
sure.
right? They play Baltimore twice. They'll beat them one time or something. So I think there's enough easy games on the schedule that this can still be a 9-8 type of team in the postseason.
And flirt with the wild card.
Right. The big issue is they already lost to Washington and New England. So I'm sitting here telling you, yeah, Carolina, the Giants, the Browns, the Raiders, the Broncos. What if they lose those games too?
Well, they're not going to the
right.
playoffs.
So, like, they've already lost to two of the bad teams on the schedule. There are more bad teams that they can or should beat, but they've already done it twice
right.
where they failed in that. So I think they'll be fine in terms of getting back into
teams.
The playoff mix.
Right.
But they've given themselves effectively no margin for error from here on out. They can't really
lose. Well, they're a different 0-3 than Jacksonville.
A little bit, because the Jags looked pretty terrible.
Yeah.